Small but infinitely deadly, the Sun Crusher superweapon entered orbit around the gas giant of Yavin, flying side by side with the armored New Republic transport. Sitting in the streamlined pilot's seat, Kip Duran felt the Sun Crusher's advanced controls respond to his fingertips. He stared through the segmented viewport at the eddying orange planet below, a waiting, bottomless pit where the Sun Crusher would be buried forever.
Ready to send her down, Kip?
The voice of Wedge Antilles crackled over the comm unit.
Straight line plunge.
Kip fingered the controls, feeling a chill of reluctance. The Sun Crusher was such a perfect weapon. But he also knew that Kwee-Zoox was right and that the temptation to use such power would eventually corrupt anyone. He adjusted the sublight course vectors. I'm setting the nav systems now. Prepare to dock. Kwee's voice interrupted his thoughts.
Make certain all power systems are shut down and seal the containment field.
Kip flicked a row of switches. Already done. He heard the muffled thump of hull against hull as Wedge brought the armored transport against the Sun Crusher.
Magnetic field's in place, Kip. Open the hatch and come on over.
Setting the timer, Kip activated the autopilot, dimmed the lights in the cockpit, and clambered toward the small hatch. He opened it, and Wedge helped him into the transport. They sealed the Sun Crusher behind them, then disengaged the docking connection. Wedge moved back to the pilot's seat of the armored transport and flopped into the cockpit chair beside Kwee-Zoox. Kwee sat strapped in with crash restraints. She was obviously filled with anxiety. Wedge nudged the attitude control thrusters and swung the armored transport around so they could watch. The elongated crystal shape of the Sun Crusher increased its distance, drifting closer to the gravitational jaws of Yavin. Finally, the superweapon dwindled to a mere speck, approaching the chaotic storms of Yavin. Kip saw the shape plunge into the upper atmosphere, plowing down on its unalterable course toward the planetary core. He imagined the Sun Crusher streaking deeper and deeper into the dense atmosphere. Scorching heat generated by atmospheric friction would throw off ripples and sonic booms as the Sun Crusher went down, down to the gas giant's diamond-thick core.
"Well, we never have to worry about that thing again," Wedge said.
Wedge ignited the thrusters of the armored transport and arced them away from close orbit to the fringes of the system of moons.
"Kwee and I are due to go inspect the reparation work on Vortex. Still want to go down to the jungle moon, Kip?"
Kip nodded. "Yes. Master Skywalker is waiting for me." Staring out the observation window of an orbiting way station high above the planet of Calamari, Leia thought the Calamarian shipyards looked even more impressive than their reputation had led her to expect. The starship construction facilities rode high above the mottled blue planet, supply platforms sprawled in three dimensions, dotted with winking red, yellow, and green lights that indicated landing pads and docking bays. Small girder impellers pushed huge mounds of plasteel. The girders would be used in the frameworks of the famous Mon Calamari star cruisers.
"Excuse me, Minister Organa Solo?"
Leia turned to see a small Calamarian female wearing pale blue ambassadorial robes. While the males had bulbous and lumpy heads, the females were more streamlined with olive-colored mottling over the pale salmon of their hides.
"I am Silgal."
The Calamarian female raised both of her webbed hands. Leia raised her own hand in acknowledgement.
"Thank you for meeting me, Ambassador. I appreciate your help."
The ambassador stepped forward to gesture out at the bustling space dock facility.
"I see you have been observing our work on the Star Tide. It will be our first addition to the New Republic fleet in many months. We have been devoting most of our resources to recovering from last year's attack by the Emperor's world devastators."
Leia nodded, looking again at the splotchy organic shape of the Mon Calamari star cruiser. She tore her gaze from the activity and nodded at the ambassador. "As always, I am astonished at the resourcefulness and dedication of the Calamarians. You have given so much after your enslavement by the Empire, after the attacks you've suffered. I feel reluctant to ask for further help, but I desperately need to speak with Admiral Ackbar." Silgal straightened her sky-blue robes.
"We have respected Akbar's request for privacy and his need for contemplation after the tragedy on Vortex, but our people remain proud of him and support him entirely. If you wish to bring further charges against..."
"No, no," Leia said. "I've come to beg him to return."
"In that case, a shuttle is ready to take you down."
Leia gripped the widely spaced arms of the passenger seat as Silgal maneuvered the egg-shaped shuttle through sleeting rain and knotted gray storm clouds. The vessel curved away from small, marshy islands, sparse dots of habitable land where the amphibious Calamarians had first established their civilizations. Through the mists and the whipping spray, Leia watched them approach the metal island of Foam Wander's city. The bright lights of thousands of above-surface windows shed jewels of light even through the whipping rain. Below the hemispherical dome, Leia knew that the floating cities had underwater towers and descending complexes like the mirror image of a Coruscant skyline. Starved for raw materials on their marshy islands, the Mon Calamari had not been able to build a civilization until they joined forces with another intelligent species that lived beneath the oceans. The Quarren, a humanoid race with helmet-shaped heads and faces that looked like a fistful of tentacles sprouting beneath close-set eyes, had excavated metallic ores from the ocean crust. Working with the Calamarians, they built dozens of floating cities. Though the Quarren could also breathe air, they chose to remain under the sea, while the Calamarians designed starships to explore the bright islands in space. After they entered the upper level of the city and docked their craft, Silgal led Leia to a turbolift that plunged them down into the city's deep underwater levels. When they emerged, the lighting was dim and shimmering. A jewel blue reflected through faceted glow lamps and thick transparasteel windows that looked out into the ocean depths. Following a ramp downward, they emerged into an open equipment bay that had been pressurized to allow easy access to the water. Quarren, dressed in sleek black suits, were diving through access fields into the watery depths. Silgal went to a row of small porcelain compartments and opened one. She removed a pair of the slithery suits worn by the diving Quarren, handing one to Leia. Leia ran her fingers over the fabric. It seemed alive, clinging and slippery at the same time. The tiny mesh expanded and contracted as if seeking an appropriate shape to best serve the wearer. Silgal indicated a closet-sized door, and Leia stepped inside, sealing the door behind her as blue-green illumination intensified in the small chamber. She disrobed and slid into the black suit, feeling her skin tingle as the fabric adjusted, trying to conform. When the crawly sensation stopped, it was the most comfortable garment she had ever worn. Warm yet cool, light yet insulating, fuzzy yet slick. When Leia emerged, Silgal stood outside the door, already wearing her water garment. Without speaking, she fitted a water jetpack over Leia's shoulders. Then she dipped her broad hands into a bubbling urn. She pulled out a floppy, translucent sheet and held it up. Water streamed off its surface, fizzing with tiny bubbles.
"Humans sometimes find this unpleasant. I apologize."
Silgal slapped the gelatinous mass across Leia's mouth and nose. The membrane was cold and wet, clinging to her cheeks, her skin. Leia stiffened in alarm and tried to struggle, but the strange, soft gel stuck fast to her face. Starved for air, Leia tried to suck in a deep breath and found herself inhaling clean, ozone-smelling air. Pure oxygen filled her lungs, and as she breathed slowly out, the bubbles percolated back through the membrane. Silgal handed Leia a pair of small devices. The microphone slid into the gelatinous membrane, but was held firmly. When she put the second jack into her ear, Silgal's voice came through clearly.
"The symbiote you are wearing filters oxygen from the sea. It can last for weeks underwater."
As they jetted through the water, Leia felt warm currents on her forehead and around her eyes. The symbiote fed her a steady supply of air, and the fine mesh suit kept her warm and dry and comfortable. She remained close beside Silgal as their jetpacks bubbled and streamed. Suddenly, Leia froze as she saw a deadly sleek form like an Imperial attack ship above. An enormous living creature with a long, bullet-shaped body, spined fins, a mouth filled with fangs. On either side of the mouth streamed whipping tentacles, each tipped with razor-jawed pincers. Leia began to swim frantically backward. Silgal grabbed her shoulder and pulled her down.
"Trekana, it won't find us."
Silgal sounded altogether too calm. Fish swam frantically away from the torpedo shape of the predator. Silgal seemed to be concentrating.
"No, it will get that one."
She gestured with one large hand.
"The blue and yellow striped keeler. After that, it will take the smaller orange one in the middle of the school. By then, all the others will have fled, and the Trekana will continue on its way. Then we can leave."
"How do you know that?"
"I know. It's a little trick I have."
Leia watched in horrified fascination as the Krikana streaked forward, coming unexpectedly from below as it reached out with its mass of tentacles to grab the blue and yellow keeler and rip it to ragged shreds before stuffing its fang-filled mouth. By the time the monster had grabbed the pale orange fish, the rest of the school had fled. Leia stared at Silgal, amazed at her prescience, but the Calamarian ambassador squeezed Leia's upper arm before igniting her water jetpack.
"Now we must go find Akbar."
Leia and Silgal swam closer to the choppy surface until they reached a place where leathery sea trees, veined with iridescent blue and red, swirled in the churning currents stirred by the continuing storm.
When Akbar was younger, he had a small dwelling here in the wild sea tree thickets.
Ahead, Leia saw a spherical dwelling made of plasteel, covered with algae and draping weed that had grown up from a spray clinging to its hull. Large valves of water recirculation equipment, desalination devices, and round viewports dotted the open spaces on the curved walls. A bare deck looked clean and bright as if recently scrubbed. They stroked down through the water. Thick sea tree trunks anchored the dwelling module in place, rocking it from side to side. On the bottom of the hull, they found an opening. Silgal went first through the containment field, and Leia followed. When her head plunged through into the dim interior, she stripped off the symbiote, shook herself, and looked around Akbar's cluttered home. He stood up in alarm from a bench made of pitted flowstone, speechless as Silgal and Leia eased themselves out of the water. They stood silently staring at each other for a long moment. Finally, Leia spoke. "Admiral Akbar, I'm glad we found you." Later, they sat finishing bowls of simple but delicious fish stew. Leia chewed on the tender meat, swallowed another mouthful, and licked her lips to taste the burning sweet tingle of Calamarian spices. "We need you back, Admiral," Leia said. Leia had told him the whole story of Mon Mothma's illness, and now she leaned on Akbar's small table and stared at him, her dark eyes pleading.
"I'm sorry, Leia."
Akbar shook his head. He indicated the newly refurbished workroom and his equipment.
"I have important work to do here. My planet was badly damaged during the Imperial attacks, and there have been many tectonic disturbances. I've taken it upon myself to find out if our planet's crust has become unstable. No more lives will be lost because of me. I was just preparing to set some new seismic sensors."
He shuffled toward a shelf filled with packaged electronic equipment.
"Please, leave me in peace."
Leia stood up quickly. "We'll help you set out your sensors, Admiral." Akbar hesitated, as if lonely but afraid to have their company. He turned to meet Leia's eyes, then Silgal's.
"Yes. I would be honored to have your assistance."
Strapped into one of the seats in the cramped utility sub, Leia watched as water sloshed around the upper ports. The sea swallowed the craft, and they descended into the isolated sea tree forest until the ocean around them looked like panels of dark green smoked glass. Akbar picked a course through thick, ropey strands and wide pillars.
"I have only begun deploying my seismic network. I've set up the baseline grid beneath my dwelling, but I need to extend into the sea tree forest to get higher resolution soundings."
Silgal said,
"I am pleased with the important work you're doing for our planet, Admiral. It is necessary to do important things with your life,"
Akbar said. Then said no more, walling himself off in silence. Leia cleared her throat.
Akbar, I understand how you must feel, but you can't hide on Calamari forever."
Akbar would not look at her.
"I'm not hiding. I have my work, important work."
Silgal interrupted, leaning forward to indicate some curved, half-buried sections of metal, like the ribbed shell of some sort of escape pod.
"What's that?"
The edges had corroded, and tracings of algae grew in the protected crevices.
"Perhaps a wrecked ship," Akbar said.
He inserted his hands into the Waldo control gloves for the automated metallic claws that extended from the front of the small sub. Watching the external metal arms, Leia saw Akbar remove a canister from the external storage bin on the submersible. The nimble robotic claws positioned the cylinder upright in the soft sand. Reversing propellers, Akbar lifted them away. Craning his neck so that he could see better through the front viewport, Akbar pushed the activate button. With a vibrating thump that Leia could feel through the sub's hull, the seismic canister detonated its tiny explosive. A long rod plunged deep into the ocean floor while spraying out a web of secondary detectors symmetrically around the core like a shooting star. Akbar peered into his widely set stereoscopic sensor displays.
"Oh, this is interesting."
"What is it?"
"Another large metallic mass tangled in the weeds right above us."
Akbar eased the sub ahead. As Leia saw the outline of a large, multi-legged thing wrapped with sea trees and overgrown with algae, she thought it was some kind of alien life form. Then she recognized the squashed elliptical head, the segmented body core trailing jointed mechanical arms, its non-reflective black surface. She had seen something like this on the ice planet Hoth, when Han Solo and Chewbacca had stumbled upon the Imperial probe droid.
Admiral? I see it. Arakeed Viper Series Probot. The Empire dispatched thousands to all corners of the galaxy to hunt down rebel bases.
It must have landed years ago on Calamari, Sugal said. The wreckage we found below was its landing pod.
Akbar nodded.
But when the probe droid tried to rise to the surface, it tangled in the seaweed. It must have shut down.
He nudged the sub closer, shining his depth light on the outer surface. But when the beam struck the Probot's rounded head, its entire bank of round eyes blinked to life.
It's been activated, Leia said.
She could hear the high-pitched, vibrating hum of powerful generators as the probe droid began to move again. The head swiveled and directed its own glowing beam at the sub. Akbar pushed the propellers into reverse, but before the sub could move away, the Probot launched out with its spider-like claws. Mechanical arms latched onto one of the sub's rounded fins. Akbar threw all the sub's power into pulling away, and succeeded only in yanking the probe droid along with him, tearing it free of ancient strands of weed. Through the speakers of the comm unit, a sudden static-filled burst of subspace gibberish blasted out from the probe droid in some kind of powerful coded signal. The long chain of data shouted toward space, even as the deadly Probot wrestled with Akbar's sub. The black droid finally succeeded in rotating its head, bending its laser cannons toward the sub. Akbar fired the lateral jets, wrenching them and the probe droid sideways as a volley of vicious laser blasts screamed past them, plowing a tunnel of sudden steam through the water. He tugged at the Waldos and brought another of his equipment arms to bear, a small cutting laser. Its tip heated to incandescent red-white as he slashed through the probe droid's gripping metal claw, severing the plasteel and breaking them free. Leia knew it was hopeless. They couldn't get away, and the cutting laser would do nothing against the far superior weapons of the Probot. And unlike Luke, she had not mastered Jedi skills enough to mount even a feeble defense. But Akbar, still looking cool and in control, fired two blasts from the cutting laser at the head of the probe droid, attempting to blind its optical sensors. The feeble beam struck. The Probot detonated in an unexpected explosion. The shockwave rang against the hull of the sub.
It self-destructed, Silgal said.
Leia remembered Han's conjecture on Hoth. The probe droids have programming to destroy themselves rather than risk letting their data fall into enemy hands.
The Probot sent its signal before it self-destructed, Silgal observed.
Leia felt a cold fist of fear close around her stomach, but Akbar tried to dismiss the peril.
This probe droid has been here for 10 years or more, and that would have been a very old code, almost certainly obsolete. Even if the Imperials could still understand its message, who would be out there listening?
With her three Imperial Star Destroyers safely hidden among the ionized islands of the Cauldron Nebula, Admiral Dalla had retired to her private quarters to review tactics when the door chime interrupted her. Commander Kratos stood stiffly at her door. He was trying to mask a smug grin of satisfaction, but the expression displayed itself in a small facial tick and the slight upturn of his thin lips.
"Yes, Commander, what is it?" Dalla said.
"We've intercepted a signal," Kratos said. "It appears to be from an Imperial probe droid, transmitting covert data gathered on an important rebel planet called Calamari, the site of one of their prime starship-building facilities."
Dalla raised her eyebrows.
"Excellent, Commander. We've been looking for a new target to strike, and if this is an important starship construction facility, that sounds like a good candidate."
Leia piloted Akbar's open-canopied wave-speeder as they rushed over the oceans of Calamari. As they approached the lumpy hemisphere of Foam Wander City, it looked like a gunmetal gray island. Other small sea skimmers drifted in and out, gathering up nets and dashing back to access openings. Akbar sat up stiffly.
"Listen."
An all-hands alarm could be heard over the rushing noise of the wind and waves. Leia grabbed the comm unit, punching buttons for Foam Wander City control.
"This is Wavespeeder 17017. What is the cause of the alarm?"
Before Leia could receive an answer, a curtain of brilliant light sliced through the clouds, slashing the ocean surface near the floating city.
"Those are turbo lasers,"
Leia said. Akbar gripped the side of his seat.
"We're being fired on from orbit."
Overhead, like a flock of razor-winged carrion birds, came an entire squadron of TIE fighters and TIE bombers. They swooped down in a steep descent with a roaring howl of their twin ion engines. The TIE bombers released glowing energy packets that exploded in the sea, sending out great shockwaves and foam and spray. TIE fighters roared over Foam Wander City, strafing it with their laser cannons. Akbar piloted them quickly into one of the city's tunnel entrances. In the serpentine corridors, lights flashed and groups of Quarren rushed past. Leia had no doubt they were abandoning the city structure, swimming down to where they thought they were safe.
Akbar!
Several Calamarians echoed, stepping aside to allow him passage.
Admiral Akbar!
Akbar seemed taller now without the haunted look he had worn since the crash on Vortex. Leia knew that all Calamarians remembered the nightmare of Imperial attacks, but if anyone could mount a successful defense with what little resources they had, it would be Akbar. After the turbolift spilled them out onto the proper level, Ambassador Silgar led the way. She used her diplomatic access codes to let them into the core of Foamwander City until they finally emerged into the chaotic central command. 7 Calamarian technical experts sat at command stations watching the battle overhead. In the center of the room, a holographic wireframe diagram of the planet and its moon hovered amidst sparkling pinpoints of fighters flying in defensive formation.
"Give me a tactical update,"
Akbar said, stepping to the holographic projection.
"Silgal," Leia said, "get me to the comm system. I can use my priority codes to send for New Republic military assistance. On a low frequency, the codes can punch through any interference from those star destroyers."
Leia hurried to the comm station Silgal pointed out to her and punched in the override codes to send a tight beam encoded signal directly to Coruscant.
"This is Minister Leia Organa Solo. The planet Calamari is currently under attack by 2 Imperial Star Destroyers. We request immediate assistance. Repeat, immediate assistance. If you don't get here soon, don't bother to come."
The city commander thrust a webbed hand into the holographic display of the battle.
"Reposition the entire squadron of B-Wing fighters to defend the shipyards because we thought that would be the most likely target. But when the Star Destroyers came out of hyperspace, they went into orbit and began an assault on the floating cities."
"Commander,"
one of the Calamarian tacticians spoke up,
"we've lost all contact with Reef Home. Static signature analysis implies that the entire city has been destroyed."
A quiet moan of dismay rippled through Central Command. The city commander said tentatively,
"I was about to withdraw defenses from the shipyards to attack the Star Destroyers."
Akbar looked at the swarms of B-Wing fighters still harrying the Imperial fighters.
"Good decision, Commander."
But he stared intently at the map, at the moon, at the 2 Star Destroyers on the far side of the planet.
"Wait a moment. Something looks very familiar to me."
He nodded slowly, as if his great head were too heavy for his shoulders.
"Yes, Commander. Withdraw the B-Wing fighters, all of them. Send them to fight the Star Destroyers. Leave the shipyards entirely undefended."
"Is that wise, Admiral?"
Leia asked.
"No, it is a trap."
Akbar pointed a flipper hand into the images of the 2 Star Destroyers.
"The Grand Moff Tarkin is dead, but I recognize his trick. I know what the Imperial Commander plans to do. Do we have a sensor network on the far side of the moon?"
"No, Admiral,"
the city commander said.
"We had considered it years ago, but..." "I didn't think so. So we're blind there, correct?"
"Correct."
"What are you getting at, Admiral?" Leia said.
"There's a 3rd Star Destroyer hiding behind our moon."
The others turned to him in amazement.
"What proof do you have?" "The actions of the Imperial Commander tell me all I need. Their main target is indeed the shipyards. Moments after these 2 Star Destroyers came out of hyperspace, a 3rd also emerged, concealed in the shadow of our moon. The Vanguard attack is designed to lure us away from the shipyards, tricking us into throwing our entire defenses against a feint. When the 3rd Star Destroyer comes in at full sublight speed, the shipyards will be helpless. With one run, the 3rd Star Destroyer can obliterate our starship assembly facilities with virtually no losses of its own."
"But, Admiral," the city commander said, "why did you just withdraw all of our forces from the shipyards?"
"Because you are going to give me remote command of that ship."
Gesturing toward the holographic display, Akbar indicated the huge space dock hangar, where the skeletal hull of the new battlecruiser Startide hung in orbit.
"But, sir, none of the Startide's weapons are functional." "But its engines work, if I'm not mistaken."
"Yes, we tested the sublight engines only last week."
"Then give me remote operations."
Taking control, Akbar stepped into a field where virtual images were projected with a parallax designed for widely set telescopic eyes. The half-constructed ship powered up its engines and locked into drone mode. With an inaudible roar of massive sublight engines, the unarmed battleship crawled away from the orbital shipyards. Akbar felt as if he were part of the massive derelict ship as he controlled it from the core of Foamwander City. He paid no attention to the loud status reports and alarms in Central Command. His entire body was an extension of the Startide, and he stared through sensor eyes. Calamari's moon grew larger as he approached it, then began to streak by close to the airless cratered surface and out of sensor range to the dark side of the moon. As he brought the star tide around the curve of the moon, Akbar saw the arrowhead shape of the third star destroyer just powering up its weapons batteries.
There she is!
The third star destroyer suddenly detected the Mon Calamari battlecruiser and began unleashing a flurry of turbolaser bolts, but Akbar didn't care. Akbar drove on at full speed on his suicide run, heading directly down the star destroyer's throat. The Imperial ship continued to fire. Akbar released the last safety mechanisms that held the unshielded hyperdrive reactor in check. The superheated energy furnace would reach its flash point within seconds. He disconnected himself from the command console and let the laws of physics take their course. Admiral Dalla shouted into the comm system to the commander of the Manticore.
Captain Brusque, tell me what's going on.
Everything had been going according to plan. The Manticore had just begun its triumphant run to destroy the Calamarian shipyards when all havoc broke loose.
It's another ship, Admiral!
Admiral Dalla watched the command screen in front of her as the Calamarian battleship struck the underbelly of the Manticore. Just before the impact, though, the Star Tide went nova, erupting into blinding waves of energy that tore the Manticore apart. Dalla turned away, gritting her teeth and refusing to let acid tears of failure well up in her green eyes. Kip Duran felt exhilarated, yet foolish at the same time. The other Jedi students had stopped their own exercises and dropped back to watch him at work. Surrounded by the dense foliage of the jungle, with humid air wrapped like sweat around him, Kip balanced his body, his feet extended straight up into the air, his back rigid. He held himself upright with one hand resting flat on the rough ground. The heel of his palm sank into the soft dirt, blades of sharp grass stuck between his fingers. With his free hand, Kip supported a moss-covered boulder he had uprooted from the ground. He held the rock in the air with only a small effort, using the Force to do most of the work. Kip knew how to feel the Force, how to use it. It came naturally to him. In little more than a week of intensive work, he had surpassed the achievements of the other Jedi students. Kip shut himself off from socialization among the trainees. He spoke to few of the others, focusing every moment upon honing his Jedi ability, increasing his concentration, developing a rapport with the Force. He hounded Master Skywalker to give him new tasks, to set him greater challenges, so he could continue to learn and grow stronger in the Force. Then Kip felt the mossy boulder levitate off his hand. Annoyed at the interruption, he opened his eyes to see Master Skywalker grinning proudly at him.
"Very good, Kip. In fact, it's incredible. I'm not sure even Obi-Wan or Yoda would know what to do with you."
Kip flipped himself upright so that he landed on his feet. Staring into Master Skywalker's eyes, he felt his heart pounding with exhilaration. "What else can you teach me today, Master?" Master Skywalker shook his head.
"Nothing more for today, Kip."
Kip tried not to let his disappointment show. "But there is so much more to learn."
"Yes, and patience is one of those things to learn.
The ability to do a thing is not all there is. You must know the thing. You must understand how it fits with everything else you know. You must possess it for it to be truly yours." Kip nodded solemnly, as Jedi students were expected to do, but he promised himself that he would do everything necessary to make all of these new abilities his. Even in the deepest hours of the night, Kip did not sleep. He had eaten a bland but filling meal by himself, then retired to his cool quarters to meditate and practice. As he concentrated with only a small glow lamp in the corner, he sent his mind out to feel between the cracks of all the stone blocks in the great temple. He followed the life cycles of the strands of moss. He tracked tiny arachnids skittering through the corridors and vanishing into dark spaces, where his delicate touch could follow them through the blackness into their hidden homes. As he dabbled with his fledgling abilities, he felt a great cold rip in the Force, like a black gash opening the structure of the universe. He snapped himself back to the present. Kip whirled and saw behind him the looming shadow of a tall, cloaked figure. Even in the dim room, the dark man's silhouette seemed intensely black, a hole that swallowed up all glimmers of light.
"The Force is strong in you, Kip Duran."
Feeling no fear, Kip looked up at the shadowy figure.
"Who are you?"
"I could be your teacher. I could show you many things that even your Master Skywalker does not comprehend. Do you dare to learn?"
Kip felt reckless, but he trusted his instincts. They had served him well in the past. "I'm not afraid to learn, but you have to tell me your name. I won't learn from a man who is afraid to identify himself." The shadowy form seemed to ripple as if with silent laughter.
"I was the greatest Dark Lord of the Sith.
I am Exarchine.
Hey, Lando!
Lando Calrissian heard the loud, determined voice from outside in the repair bay. Without looking, Lando knew Han Solo had come to shout at him about something. He bent down on the entrance ramp to stick his head out and saw Han hurrying toward him, his face red with agitation.
Lando, I need a Falcon now!
Han pushed past him and hit the controls for the entrance ramp. Lando had to jump inside as the greased cylinders hauled the slanted metal ramp back into position.
Han, this is my ship now. You can't just...
Han went directly to the cockpit and threw himself into the pilot seat.
What do you think you're doing?
The planet Calamari is being attacked by Admiral Dalla at this very moment. Leia's trapped there. Now, are you going to help me go rescue her in the Falcon? Or do I pick you up by your scruffy neck and throw you off the ship? Lando backed off, holding both palms up in a gesture of peace.
Whoa, Han. Leia's in trouble. Let's go.
But I'm flying. He motioned for Han to move into the co-pilot's chair.
It is my ship.
Stuck in hyperspace, Han Solo could do nothing but pace around the common area. Lando came from the cockpit.
She's on autopilot.
He looked at the dejected expression on Han's face and shook his head.
Han, why don't you rest? Let's kill some time.
Then, as if the idea had just occurred to him,
how about we play a round of Sabacc?
Lando raised his eyebrows and flashed one of his famous grins. Han sat down.
I don't suppose you'd put up my ship as a stake.
Lando scowled.
It's my ship, Han.
Han leaned forward across the holographic game table.
Not for long, buddy.
Kip Duron trudged through the dense rainforest of Yavin 4, trying to find hidden paths where the jungle would allow him to pass. He knew exactly where to go. The dark spirit of Exarchine had showed him. Kip's assigned companion, Dorsk 81, stumbled beside him. The thin, smooth-skinned alien had a much more difficult time with the steamy air and the steep climbs. Insects and small biting creatures buzzed and scuttled around them, but none bothered Kip. He consciously exuded a shadow of uneasiness around him, so that lower creatures had no incentive to come nearer. Exarchine had taught him that trick, too. Kip parted a dense clump of blue leaf branches. He felt an electric thrill down his spine as the force told him they had arrived.
This,
Kip whispered,
this is our destination.
In front of them, the jungle gave way to a circular pond that shone like a flat quicksilver mirror, completely free of ripples. In the center of the lake stood a small island, dominated by an obsidian split pyramid of sharp angles showing the distinctive markings of Masasi architecture. Another temple, the same one Gantoris and Streen had located weeks before. Exarchune had told Kip all about it. Between the two parts of the bifurcated spire of the tall pyramid stood a colossus, a polished black statue of a dark man, the tattoo of a black sun emblazoned on his forehead. Exarchine, the dark lord of the Sith. The giant orange sphere of Yavin and the system's small sun lurked on the horizon. They would both be setting soon. Kip went to the edge of the lake. The water was as transparent as diamond. Just below the surface, he saw columns of rock rising from the bottom like barely submerged stepping stones. Kip stepped out onto one. The clear water rippled around the bottom of his shoe, but he did not sink in. He took another step to the second stone. Dorsk 81 stared at him. Kip knew it looked as though he were walking on water.
Are you using the Force?
Dorsk 81 asked.
No, I'm using stepping stones.
Once he reached the island, Kip stepped onto mounds of pitted volcanic rock splotched with orange and green lichen that looked like droplets of alien blood. He could already feel the power. Kip turned to watch his companion pick his way across the lake. Then he stepped into the enfolding darkness of the temple. But when he blinked his eyes, the light gradually grew inside the chamber, as if lightning bolts trapped within the black slabs of glass continued to send faint sparks, visible only from the corner of his eye. When Kip faced the polished dark walls, he saw nothing in them, only faint hieroglyphics in a long-forgotten language. He turned to see Dorsk 81 standing just within the opening, looking out at the jungle beyond the lake. The sphere of Yavin had vanished below the treetops, and the sky began to thicken with purple twilight as the distant sun also set.
I'm very sleepy all of a sudden,
Dorsk 81 said. As if hypnotized, he shambled over to a corner and slithered down against the wall. He fell asleep almost before he had settled into place.
Now you and I can continue in a more appropriate setting.
Kip turned to see the hooded silhouette of Exarchune, like a black oil stain shimmering in the air. Kip stood tall, squashing a thrill of terror.
You have already learned more than Skywalker will ever know, my student.
Kip felt enthusiasm and pride burn through him. Exar Kun gestured toward the obsidian walls and the incomprehensible hieroglyphs barely visible there, black lines against black volcanic glass.
Look what I can show you today.
As Kip looked at them, the words filled with white fire, standing out against the bottomless, opaque background until they burned into his eyes. And suddenly Kip could understand. The words snapped into focus and filled his mind, an incredible history from 4,000 years ago, telling how Exar Kun had begun to learn forbidden teachings, how he had come to the fourth moon of Yavin to find a lost Sith power object, and how he had enslaved the timid and weak Masasi people, making them build enormous temples for him as focal points for the dark forces he played with.
The Brotherhood of the Sith could have ruled the galaxy, could have squashed the doddering Republic, and turned the other Jedi Knights into mere parlor magicians. But I was betrayed.
The shadow of Exar Kun drifted about the floor of the temple, making no sound as he moved.
When the Jedi combined their might and came here to this moon to fight me, they unleashed such power that I had to drain dry every last one of the Masasi just to trap my spirit within these temples, to survive so that one day I could come back.
Kip was enthralled by the new wonders Exar Kun had shown him. But he was savvy enough to know when he was being manipulated. Exar Kun thought he was playing Kip like a mesmerized convert, but Kip could play his own part to get what he so desperately wanted. He spread wide his arms in complete acceptance of his new instructor. Teach me more about the ancient Sith ways. Tell me how to use these new powers so I can crush the Empire once and for all. Still reeling from the destruction of the Manticore, Admiral Dalla slumped against the bridge rail. She found herself at a loss for words as the battle on Calamari continued. Staring at the fiery battlefield of the ocean world below, she said,
"Dispatch the last Tie squadron. I want to lay this entire planet waste."
"Admiral!"
Commander Kratos ran between the sensor and tactical stations and up the two steps to the observation platform.
"Rebel battleships have just come out of hyperspace. An entire fleet. More than we can hope to fight."
Dalla whirled in disbelief.
"They responded to a distress call that quickly?"
Then she too saw the glinting figures of large battleships streaking like comets toward them in planetary orbit.
"Recall all Tie squadrons. Plot a straight line vector through hyperspace to the Cauldron Nebula. We'll go back and reassess our tactics, determine our losses, and we'll prepare our next attack."
Han Solo and Lando Calrissian soared through the skies of Calamari in the Millennium Falcon, searching for columns of smoke rising from devastated floating settlements. They had found Foam Wander City, but when they landed on one of the emergency pads, they learned that Admiral Akbar, Leia, and Ambassador Silgal had already departed on a rescue mission to the sunken city of Reef Home. Han was once again the pilot and owner of the Falcon, but he was so wrapped up in dismay at the devastation caused by Admiral Dalla's forces that he felt no particular jubilation at having won his ship back. All his exhilaration had evaporated upon seeing the destruction that had been wreaked on the ocean world. Lando sat at Chewbacca's station, staring at the navigation charts.
"Well, looks like Reef Home City should be coming up somewhere below. I detect plenty of scattered metallic masses, but nothing that might be a metropolis."
"No, just the remains," Han said. As they skimmed low, he looked out the Falcon's viewports at the floating wreckage scattered on the waves. Broken chunks of the floating Reef Home City, sealed and airtight with flood bulkheads, remained afloat like buoyant coffins. Calamarian and Quarren rescuers swarmed over the self-contained segments, trying to break through to free those inside. Han set the Falcon down on a smooth chunk of Reef Home's outer shell, then locked down the stabilizers and broke open the door seals. He clambered down the exit ramp with Lando close behind. The wounded had been dragged onto the floating wreckage of the Calamarian city. Although waves sloshed over the metal edges, for now the surfaces of the fragments had been designated infirmary areas, relatively stable platforms on which the medics could tend the injured. Han stood with his legs spread wide for greater balance on the drifting fragment. He noticed a wave speeder skimming toward him.
Leia piloted it, accompanied by Akbar and a female Calamarian.
Han waved frantically, and the wave speeder veered toward him, coming alongside, and Leia leapt off the vehicle as Akbar lashed it to a ragged stump of torn metal. She walked confidently, then ran and flung herself into Han's arms.
"Dalla did this, didn't she?"
Han said.
"We think so, but we have no proof yet," Leia said.
The female Calamarian climbed out of the wave speeder and went to the triage area, glancing at the bleeding Calamarians as medics attempted to tend them. She walked among the injured, making quick pronouncements, as if she could somehow determine their chances for survival and whether precious resources should be spent treating them. Han watched her as she moved among them like an angel of life and death. "Who is that?" he asked. "Her name is Silgal. She's the Calamarian ambassador. I think she has Jedi powers. She doesn't know it yet. I'm going to make sure she goes to see Luke." Leia hugged her husband again. "I'm so glad you came."
"I was on my way the moment I heard."
Han cocked an eyebrow as he looked at Lando.
"By the way, we played another little game of sabacc en route. This time, I won."
"The Falcon's yours again?" Leia said with delight, then slipped her arm through his. Still grinning, she looked at Lando. "Sorry to hear that, Lando."
He shrugged. "It was one way to get him off my back."
Akbar climbed out of the skimmer and stood on the rocking wreckage. He seemed devastated. Han went up to him.
"Admiral, I heard what you did, how you defeated an entire Star Destroyer. Great work."
Leia moved beside him. "Admiral, your victory here must make up for the accident on Vortex. I hope you aren't considering going back into hiding."
Akbar shook his massive head. "No, Leia. You've reminded me of one thing with your friendly insistence. I am not the type of person who can hide."
Leia placed a hand on the Admiral's thick biceps. "Thank you, Admiral. The New Republic needs you."
But Akbar shook his head. "No, Leia, I won't be returning to Coruscant. I must help my people rebuild, to strengthen their civilization and to tighten their defenses against future Imperial strikes."
Han gripped Leia's shoulder, feeling iron cords of tension rippling beneath her smooth skin. With Akbar's refusal to return to Coruscant and with Mon Mothma growing weaker day by day, Leia would have to face all the problems of the New Republic alone. As half-night fell across the jungles of Yavin 4, Luke Skywalker sat back and allowed himself to relax in one of the meeting halls. Bright glow lamps hung in old torch sconces. One of the trainees, Tian, sat in the corner preparing to play a stringed musical instrument, two hollow resonating boxes separated by a shaft strung with tonal cords.
"This is the ballad of Nomi Sunrider," she said, "one of the historical Jedi Knights."
Luke closed his eyes and heard her tale about young Nomi Sunrider, who, after her husband's murder, attended the Jedi training that had been meant for him. Nomi had become a pivotal character in the devastating Sith War that pitted Jedi against Jedi in the ancient days of the Old Republic. From the far side of the room, Luke heard a restless stirring and turned to see Kip Duron, his face stormy.
"I wish you wouldn't perpetuate that ridiculous story," Kip said. "Nomi Sunrider was a victim. She fought in the Sith Wars without ever understanding what the battles were about. She listened blindly to her Jedi masters, who were afraid because Exar Kun had discovered a way for the Jedi to increase their power."
Tian, looking stricken, set her musical instrument on the flagstones and gripped her knees through the fabric of her robe.
"Where did you learn all this history, Kip?"
Luke stood up and put his hands on his hips, trying to stare Kip down. The young man had become more and more volatile as he acquired Jedi knowledge. Kip narrowed his eyes. He drew several deep breaths, and Luke could sense the turmoil inside him, as if his mind were working rapidly to come up with an answer.
"I can use the holocron, too. As Master Skywalker keeps telling us, we are all obligated to learn everything we can."
Luke didn't quite believe the young man's words, but before he could ask another question, R2 trundled in. Luke deciphered some of the electronic language. "No idea who it is?"
"We have a visitor," Luke announced. "A ship is landing on the grid right now."
He turned to place a firm hand on Kip's shoulder, but the young man shrugged it away. "We'll discuss this later, Kip." Relieved to have a distraction that would shatter the tension, Luke led the way. The other Jedi students followed him down the stone steps and through the hangar bay to the cleared landing grid. The cockpit doors swung up like the wings of a great insect, and the pilot emerged. A young woman stepped down, pulled off an opaque helmet, and shook her dark reddish-brown hair. Her angular face had once been pinched with determination, but now seemed softened, her eyes wider, her full lips not entirely unaccustomed to a smile.
"Mara Jade," Luke said.